Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Daniel Quick.
Makalua.
Imran Siddiqui.
Cardamandua.
With guest co-hosts.
Malfishard.
Beta.
Grandpa Troll.
Scott, would you like to do the introduction to the show?
Sure.
Good, thank you. I hate pressure.
Welcome to Polycast number 74. With us we have Grandpa Troll, Dan Q, Makalua, Beta, and Imran.
You know, you did forget to introduce somebody, Scott.
Is that Dan?
No, you know them very well, actually, better than anybody else here.
I said your name, so I know that,
Yourself.
Oh, me, yeah, and me, of course. Alpha Shard, yeah.
As people have probably have seen, CivCon 09, scheduled for August 7th to 9th, has been canceled. And unfortunately, registration numbers were too low. We recognize that the registration was unexpectedly delayed, and that limits people time-wise, you know, being able to get time off work, as well as being able to have the money saved. We hope that there will be another opportunity for the event in the future.
Join us for a forum talk where we talk about the Civ can help your career, and universal suffrage is overpowered, most important tech being flight, nuclear weapons should be more expensive, and all about in-game logs, chat, combat, events, and quests.
In the research lab, we talked about unit facing, capturing equipment from the enemy, and we decided we needed a whole nother podcast to talk about Civilization V because there's just too much to talk about.
This is Forum Talk, where we investigate hot Civ issues in the forums.
Can Civ help your career, or Civ can help your career, depending which way you want to look at it?
It'll give you a relaxing time away from your career. That's what it does for me, a chance to unwind.
I recall an interesting study that was released, around three or four years ago, and it was when all the hype was on about kids playing too much in the way of video games. And the study actually came to the conclusion that kids who were spending a lot of time in video games did better in school and actually did better in the workplace. Now, in the school, you could say whether it was just a question of pure intelligence, but in the workplace, they said what they'd come up with, they had better social interaction skills, better problem-solving skills, and these were the things that were directly applicable to a career. So it seems to me that that applied to some of the video games back then. It applies just as easily to Civ, if not more so.
I don't know. You go on World of Warcraft and social skills are really bad. But
Spore.
Some of the planning skills are even worse.
Yeah, but for Civ specifically, I think it's a good management tool, you know, how to manage all your workers, all your units. So that's a good way to keep track of things.
I'd say for me, it's a little bit more vice versa. My career as a manager has helped me more with Civ, you know, because I have to cover so many areas of my work, so, and supervise so many people and accountable for so many different aspects. So that has helped my career in Civ.
There was one person in the thread who said, Civ can definitely help your career. It's just that the odds of doing it are pretty low. Comment from John Schaefer. Well, okay, John.
Lies.
It's like, this question is not applicable for you.
I would say that Civ would probably hurt your career more often than help, because if you keep walking into work all tired, you probably won't get much done.
One more turn, yeah.
Well, if you manage your time well.
One more turn.
Your boss says, hey, that report was due today at 3 o'clock. What's up with you? Hey, I was up all night conquering the world. Back off.
You don't have open borders, boss. Step out of my office.
Past Polycast guest co-host Rusty Edge said, I'm a retired insurance adjuster, and I think random events are way cool.
Yeah, I bet so. It's not covered. Sorry.
Obviously, if you're in the gaming industry or wanting to break into the gaming industry, playing Civ and modding Civilization can be really beneficial. As far as the content of Civilization, certainly not a lot of the specifics can really help, because there's a lot of abstraction there, and there's a lot of changes in gameplay, as should be the case because, you know, it's supposed to be fun. I think just the actual practice, the strategy involved, if you're then able to, kind of what Beta was saying, you know, having the intelligence to be able to apply what you're doing in-game and then applying it to your career or even your personal life in general and vary from person to person.
Yeah, I try to tell Mrs. Troll, I'm the ruler here. And of course, I get shot down and deposed.
Dream on.
Legion Steve perhaps had my favorite comment, which was, I think I use a lot of the same skills at work, manager programmer in a business software company, as I do when I'm playing Civ. Unfortunately, I can't use the same strategies. I don't have a trebuchet to fire people, though I often wish I did.
Is universal suffrage overpowered?
Nah, not early on. Definitely not. I think it's a handy tool, but unless you got a boatload of gold, I don't think it's overpowering.
I agree with Grandpa Troll. If you don't have the money, then you can't rush anything, so it doesn't really help you all that much, and all you really have is the plus one hammer for the
town. But the thing is, you've got to have cottages planted sometime before you're thinking of using universal suffrage for this benefit, because it takes whatever number of turns it is to get up to a town.
Right.
So that's also later game. Combine that with the fact, as people have already said, of needing gold to be able to spend, finish production in a city. There are other government civics that are more useful to you, generally speaking. Found universal suffrage useful in one game in about the past year or so, and that was in a multiplayer game, and that allowed the ability to purchase nuclear weapons rather quickly.
I only really found universal suffrage useful when I didn't know that I should keep my science slider as high as possible throughout. Like, I mean, that was even okay to run a deficit for a while. So I would always have this pile of gold and nothing to do with it until I realized that I should be putting all of that gold to keeping my science slider up.
Yeah, so. I concur. I find it's usually you're spending so much in research, you just don't have the extra cash kicking around to spend on production. To me, if you plan your cities properly, you've got some good production cities anyways that can take care of what you might be trying to rush.
I often find that later on in the game, I still want to be in hereditary rule or representation because still, even then, it is of more benefit to me. Hereditary rule more so. For me, when it comes to gold income, the benefit for the gold income are upgrading units, and you don't need universal suffrage for that.
The question of the most important tech is raised by the Snug. He's making a proposition that it's flight.
A couple of arguments I'll make. The underlying argument is to say the most important tech equals X. That's a really difficult thing to say when Civ has so many different paths to take and you got so many different play styles and difficulty settings and resource distribution and so on and so forth. But if we are going to say there's a most important tech, surely it's one of those earlier on techs. Unless you got an advanced start. If you had an advanced start, then I think flight really gets up there.
I agree.
But you kind of need to be prioritizing other things in order to be able to survive long enough to get to flight.
Even though I don't play often, I can imagine that someone who does play a lot would say, flight, what's that? I never get that far.
Yeah, some people do say that. But I think with the bunkers and there are anti-aircraft units, there are countermeasures against flight. The planes and the bombers. It's only really useful if your computer opponents aren't at your level yet, and that does happen, especially when I'm playing on Warlord. But like for those who are playing DD and Immortal, I imagine that the computer is right there with them, so they manage to get out their own bunkers and anti-air units to countermeasure.
And of course, other humans in multiplayer are smart enough to go, oh crap, they have flight, build bunkers!
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yes, in addition to the Snug, who at the time this thread started was known as Sir Snuggles, he and the Thaddean were on the side of the most important tech being flight, and Thaddean himself says that you're right, this will not win in multiplayer, nor should it. That part is acknowledged. I'll just kind of go over a little bit of an overview of what the Snug said, particularly this sentence. When you are a warmonger seeking to destroy the world, or a pacifist builder like me who simply wishes to defend yourself from Boudica, then flight is the most important tech in the game. It is the most unbalancing tech regarding warfare. Later on, he says, I do not believe in or use early rushes. Hence, for a pacifist like me, flight is a tech that ensures victory in battle. As Guana said, that's an unusual stance to take. Don't like early war, so for a pacifist like me, I like to wait until the game is 3/4 of the way over, then use airplanes to win my domination victories. Quote unquote. For your play style, then yes, flight perhaps is overpowered, but you might not like early rushes, but unless you aren't surrounded by too many AIs or powerful AIs early on in the game, you're going to be subjected to early rushes whether you like it or not.
Right.
True.
So you need to be able to defend, at the very least, what you have, and defend, besides invasion, also being able to expand early on. So even if you're not going to early war, say that, oh, you know, I'm peaceful, you might not be so peaceful when you're looking at destruction in the game.
I've noticed only on chieftain level can you really be peaceful. On Warlord, I've constantly gotten attacked by civs that were, like, on the other side of the planet, who just say, I want to attack you. Okay, we barely talked, and all of a sudden they want to attack me for no apparent reason. So I don't know how you can be peaceful on higher levels than chieftain. On chieftain level, yeah, you can just wait until the end of the game, modern part of the game, and just bring out all the planes and then bomb cities and just take them with very token force, but later levels you really need to go to war earlier, I think.
What I also found interesting in the thread was some of the other options that were thrown out as the most important tech. Two that came to my mind, one was bronze working, and the other was writing, and I think perhaps the poster meant to say alphabet, and that would get my vote, because I find multiplayer or single player, the first person to alphabet has got an early game lead in tech through trading that they're able to carry quite a while into the mid, if not into the later game.
Yeah, I think you got a good point, Beta. I do.
That's what I always push for, is try to be the first to alphabet, and if you can hold that, then you have a chance to trade with those who don't have it, and you become the tech broker for a number of turns in there, and that, to me, is a bit more powerful than flight, because by the time you get flight, everybody else is either getting it or close behind. Yeah, it's a military advantage, but it doesn't last long enough to be significant.
Correct.
If you were to force me to say, okay, Dan, pick a technology which is the most important, generally speaking, in the game, unless you are want for forests to chop, I would say bronze working, because that introduces you to be able to chop, and it also reveals copper, which can be very good early on for some early axe rushing, or at the very least being able to defend yourself, whether it's from other AIs or even human players, or if you happen to have barbarians enabled. Certainly the benefit of being able to trade technologies through alphabet is also important. It is possible for those options to be disabled in game setup. Where it's not, I find sometimes early on you can do some decent backfill by trading some technologies to the AIs. Like, if you're going down one technology path and they're going down another, they might have some of the earlier technologies be backfilling in to help improve your research, or you can obviously pick and choose which technologies you want to trade. But if you're going to force me, I would say bronze working. Pottery is also a strong consideration because of the ability to cottage and the ability to build granaries, but I'd put bronze working there. Flight? Gee, no.
It sounds like it could be a poll.
Yes, this thread fails. There's no poll. Oh.
Wait a minute. No. Hold on. I read this the other day. Unless you say fact after it, it didn't exist. So you got to say this thread fails. Fact.
Is that a new internet rule?
Okay, I'm 50 years old. I just learned something. Fact. Then it makes it so.
The big blast. Should nuclear weapons be more expensive?
Absolutely.
Judging from that one multiplayer game I and Dan and one of our other guest co-hosts had one time, yeah, they might want to make them a little more expensive, because when you have more than... How many nukes did you guys drop on those cities when we went and nuked everything?
Oh, yeah. A few dozen.
Yeah, and it didn't take that many turns to make them. I mean, we were rushed buying some of them, but still, yeah, they need to be more expensive. It's too easy to get overkill.
Despite that one particular application, I don't think nuclear weapons should be more expensive. In that particular multiplayer situation, we were a number of human players teaming up against the AI. I don't remember what difficulty level we were at.
Probably chieftain.
No, it wasn't.
No, it was...
Just guess.
No, it was more than that. But it was later game, and again, sometimes you don't get to that point, or oftentimes you don't get to that point unless you're starting in an era other than ancient. The nuclear weapons, the effects of nuclear weapons, and we've talked about before, for instance, global warming, like, oh my goodness, needless to say, a bit in the extreme. The Me and Team says in this thread, also past Polyguest guest co-host, if you think nukes are so overpowering, try being in an Immortal or a DD game consistently using them and seeing them what happens. Well, now, I don't think that's a particularly strong argument simply because the segment of the civilization audience you're talking to on those levels is relatively small. But as he also points out, the game already has diplo penalties for it, which can be kind of silly depending on the situation, he says. But I think the strongest point he has is that notice that every time you fire one, your power drops, so to compensate that, you need to build conventional forces, or you won't get capitulation, if you have that enabled, and war weariness might also be a problem, too. An extension of that is, combined with the power drop, the fact that you need to have conventional troops and actually go in to take cities in that game that Mackie mentioned, even though we dropped 2 or 3 dozen nuclear bombs on the AI, they only capitulated after conventional troops were moved in and started taking cities. So I don't think they're overpowered.
Well, maybe that's something else for them to look at because, well, historical example, drop 2 bombs, okay, I capitulate. More powerful in the diplomatic sense, I guess is where I'm trying to say.
As opposed to, say, the hammer cost. Or the.
Yes. Right now it just gets everybody pissed off at you and it doesn't really do anything.
I think there was a movie called War Games. In theory, but no matter who launched the first nuke, everybody lost because you get terrorists or fanatics launching nukes. And I'm talking about in the real world, so I really think it should be harder to make nukes than it is in these games. I really do. I was reading one of the posts, I think Post 50, Moshe Levy, I guess the person's name is, was talking about having 50 nukes in 15 turns. I'm like, yeah, that might be a little unrealistic, I guess, but, I mean, we have them here, but I don't know if you could wipe out a whole nation with just like that, like you were talking about, having to have the troops go in and actually get them to capitulate.
Yeah, Moshe Levi, the one who also started the thread, if you're in a single-player game and you've got 50 nukes on 15 turns, I think you need to be moving yourself up a difficulty level.
Yeah.
To be that thorough and just be able to blanket your enemies. Plus, I also say that nuclear weapons expense, as far as extending it diplomatically and gold-wise, I think, honestly, the expense of nuclear weapons is the environmental fallout in the game. If there's no nuclear weapons launched into your civilization, even if you're on another continent, it is global warming, it is likely going to impact you. I would rather more conventional weapons. Certainly, the range that nuclear weapons has makes them very powerful. The fact that you can pretty well launch them anywhere from wherever they happen to be and then put them into another city on the map, unlike, say, tactical nukes.
Right.
We're talking about the intercontinental ballistic missiles here. But there's the tactical nukes just have the range of 4, and they don't have that fallout issue either. And that's not to say that, again, that the fallout shouldn't be scaled back and the global warming issue shouldn't be scaled back. I'm just saying I think that the balance could be better, but I don't think making them more expensive is the way to go about changing their current status in the game.
I think it should have, if I'm following you correctly, it should have more fallout. I'm not talking about the impact of the crater. I'm talking about the fallout as far as what it does diplomatically, what it does environmentally to your civ or your land. I think it should have a definite diplomatic impact, because once you open Pandora's box like that, you should have some repercussion from the world.
Isn't there some, like, fallout tile or something when you drop a nuke?
Yes, and with those tiles, when they're with that fallout,
you can move in them, but it sucks all the movement out. Even with a 3-move unit, it takes all of your movement points to move through.
If you want to talk about the reality of the situation, Pandora's box is a good term. As soon as you open it up, that's it.
If you're able to get a technology lead on the AI and go for the nuclear weapons, then obviously there's not going to be the potential for the AI to strike back at you. But even if you find yourself in that situation, as soon as you do that, because of the potential environmental fallout, let alone just the fact that even if, oh, you know, that civ is never going to target me with nuclear weapons, but man, that global warming is going to go here. You should have such an immediate negative diplomatic hit that anything more than maybe 2 or 3 nuclear weapons, you are seriously looking at the entire world turning on you and declaring war.
Right.
World pariah, yep.
A little tiny nation off in the corner of the world declaring war against you, you might find annoying is not any practical impact, but with enough diplomatic hits, if you're not playing on a too easy difficulty level for you, there should be at least one other AI out there, even if that's not the one you targeted with your nuclear weapons, that, heck, even if they don't declare war on you, perhaps your relationship has been too strong during the game, they could just say, well, our trade deals are off. We're not going to trade with you anymore.
Ah, you want to embargo them.
Right.
Exactly. All about in-game logs, chat, combat, events, and quests. I know we've never actually talked about the in-game logs, which can be found in the upper left-hand corner of your screen with that little right icon, and then you've got the four tabs for chat, combat, events, and quests. Although, of course, if you're not running Beyond the Sword, then you're not going to have the events and quests, because that was introduced in Beyond the Sword. But it's really nice, particularly if there's a lot of things going on in a turn, and you miss seeing it on screen, or you want to review, for instance, you're trying to find out, man, how did that unit of mine lose, or heck, how did that even win? You can check, for instance, the combat log, and it will show you, in such and such a turn, this unit contributed these many hit points to that unit, and then that resulted in it dying, for instance. The chat log is really good in multiplayer. It doesn't work so well in single player when you're trying to talk to the AI. You're talking to yourself.
Why won't you respond to me?
Silent treatments.
You bastards. I'm going to war.
The chat log is also great if you meant to send an in-game message to someone, but you sent it to everybody. It's just fun to review those.
Oh. Oops.
That could be bad. Let's all dogpile this guy. Oh, wait.
All other players will disregard those remarks. They didn't say it.
And then your co-conspirators are like, way to go.
The combat log in particular is fabulous. I remember back in Civ 3 days in multiplayer, and you'd have to keep track. You'd have a separate thread just to keep track of the combats and which unit attacked first and which one defeated, so that rather than just opening the turn and finding your whole stack gone, you have some idea how it was done. And it's very detailed, and it's brilliant. It's one of the best additions to this edition of the game.
Yeah, I agree. That's how I found out how somebody declared war on me. They vassalized someone, and I had missed it, and I had no idea why this country had suddenly declared war on me, so I had to look in the log and see, he vassalized Incans. That's what happened.
The chat log, the one thing I do find, if you're playing by email, or maybe I'm thinking Pit Boss, it sometimes is a bit flaky as to whether you hit send and the message actually goes through. And I found people having, sometimes you send one gold with the message just to make sure it gets through. So I think there's something happening there, and no one's quite been able to define it yet, but we've worked around it.
I've also noticed that.
I just wanted to bring it up in part because I wonder how many people out there really give it the attention that it deserves, particularly combat, but also chat log and... I know quests, you know, just add flavor to the game. There's nothing groundbreaking, but there's nothing like getting a quest and then thinking, yeah, I'm going to go for that. And then you start doing it and you're like, wait, how many of X did I need again? Oh,
amen.
Oh, let's amen. Go to the XML. Well, I mean, you could do that, but this is much quicker.
Much quicker.
That's exactly why I use it, Dan, is got a lot going on. You say, was it 8 or 10 I need to go? All you got to do is flip back over there and I'll tell you real quick.
Come on into the research lab where we explore concepts that are not in Civ yet, but maybe in the future.
I'd be excited about this because this has a lot of true military consideration to it. Now, I didn't agree with some of the comments in there. It's too tactical. Oh, what the frick you think this game is anyways?
If Civ was a military game, that was the primary driving force, like a lot of real-time strategy games ultimately end up being, if nothing else, then, yeah, and maybe that actually is in some of those other games. I don't know. You know, there are two types of games. There's civilization games, and then there are games that are not civilization.
Right.
That's a good one.
And there are tanks in civilization game and tanks in not civilization games, but both are military units. So
tanks in civilization games are better than tanks in non-civilization games. Fact.
Fact, because tanks in civilization games get taken out by phalanx. Fact.
No,
it used to be.
As a longtime war gamer, going back to the days of board games, this really clicked my interest, and for the same reasons that Grandpa just mentioned, but I'm still trying to get my head wrapped around as to how you'd work it in a Civ game. I think it would require a bit of an overhaul of the whole combat system to implement it. That being said, hey, you're quite right, could add a whole new tactical level.
I think the only way it would be any kind of decent, other than the balance considerations and having to redesign combat, whether that's tweaking what we've already got in Civ 4 or actually deciding, no, we're going to start with a new foundation, go back to the beginning. When we think about the workers, some of the automation that was introduced as Civ 4 went along, such as improving the nearest city or improving trade network, Trade Piror, along the same lines, would suggest an option like an auto-face threats option that could automatically have every unit face the nearest threat, and then the player can go back and straighten out specific special cases. So you could either have it do that, or you could override that, and you decide, I like this micromanagement, I want to get into that, and I will do that. And I think that if you could somehow decide that, yes, unit facing, even in a strategy game like Civilization, this is of benefit because of this implementation and that implementation, that's great. However, I don't want to have a chapter and a manual or a 10-page article on a Civ forum to read in order to be able to use this properly. So give me the automatic option.
But to me, one of the weaknesses of Civ is that, in essence, the combat doesn't truly change.
Amen.
From, say, the
Amen.
Napoleonic times when you have an army. So you'd have your 200,000 men in one stack, which is the way battles were fought in those days.
Right.
So you could say World War II, where you'd have a defensive line where flanking that defensive line and getting around the enemy's flank and able to attack from the rear really means something. And that, to me, is what Civ doesn't handle as well. And perhaps something like facing could make an improvement there.
The comment I had made was, in a military aspect, when you're going to have a war, you see the troops coming at you, you can set up where they're going to go, from bouncing Bettys to claymore mines to mortar fire to grenades, to split the troops, make them more vulnerable, make them scatter, easier to take out. That's why I was thinking about the facing. If you could attack from a certain direction, it would give you a superiority in combat. That is one thing I'd like to see Civ, and not based strictly on just making it more of a military game, but make it more realistic military game.
When you were talking about the combat doesn't change, that's a feature, not a bug. I think this is a horrible idea, actually. I think this is an absolutely ridiculous idea, this unit-facing idea. This is Civ. This is not something complex. I love it when we link to these kind of ridiculously complex ideas that really don't get what Civ is.
Ridiculous to you, but not ridiculous to everybody.
That may be true, but I think it would totally ruin the game.
Well, you didn't say fact.
Fact. It's ridiculous fact.
Okay.
It would be needlessly complex. People would get frustrated about it. It's a nice thought experiment, and there are a lot of nice thought experiments on forums and whatnot, but don't think this would actually be workable, or don't think it would actually make anything better at all. I think it'd make things worse.
There is flanking in the game. I believe the horse units can flank.
Yes.
There's a flanking promotion. And then this also might encourage to have multiple stacks of units as opposed to one huge stack of death. You could have one unit attacking from the front and then another stack attacking from a different direction. So that might encourage multiple stacks.
Oh, and I agree that when you get into the modern era, there's a lot of things encouraging smaller stacks. Everything from artillery to bombers to nuclear weapons. So they do, you know, it gets away from the stack of death, particularly as it used to exist in Civ 3. But as it needlessly complex, the idea of flanking, out of opinion.
Because this thread had been started by Dandinoth earlier this month, and it was linked to a thread that was started, subsequent follow-up by GZ, before Civilization 4 was even released, that also talked about this. And so most of what I had seen in the discussion actually came from that secondary thread, which is why I like Trade Purer's option about auto-face threats. But that's on the condition that, however implemented, whether you micromanage it or not, that it has benefit to the combat, and it's just not needlessly complex, even if it is more realistic. Of course, the auto-threats option, how well would that be able to follow what actually is the best? And then, of course, the question always is the AI going to be able to properly take advantage of that? Although some people might say, oh, there's just something else for the AI to cheat with. I think there is a possibility, but there has to be a lot of balancing and a lot of consideration for the fact that some people just might not want to delve into that level of micromanagement and that level of tactics.
So some automation and maybe a toggle for facing or not facing, like simplified battle.
Capturing equipment from the enemy. that right there in and of itself in battle, unless it's like a small arms fire, like say you ran out of ammunition, you got yourself some small weapons that you might be able to use immediately, normally you're not going to be set up for a resupply of an enemy weapon. I'd say taking out their weaponry, but capturing it, I think it's lame.
I think if you can capture settlers and workers and enslave them to be your workers, why not be able to capture frigates or galleons or caravels and use them?
Yeah, I was thinking about like trebuchets and howitzers and later on.
The question is, how would you integrate some sort of formula in the game to determine what you capture and what you don't? Because
right.
If you end up having it too much, it could really, really mess up the game in terms of how people are enjoying the game.
Yeah, you might want to make it like a special promotion, so that not every unit could do it, but you could specialize units into trying to capture things. So like if you had a unit that you were attacking that you had injured with another unit, then you could try to capture them and their equipment. Then in Alpha Centauri, you could put a marine detachment on your ships, and you could sometimes get the other ships you were attacking by taking them over. So if you had something like that, and you could also do it on land, that might be sort of the way to go if you wanted to do that.
I like that, having the promotion line, so then you could specialize units for that. Kind of like, even though I don't use this promotion very often, there's a promotion in Civ IV that allows you to use enemy roads as if you were their own, and so you could specialize...
Commando,
it's okay. So you could specialize the unit that way.
Commando? That's got a different meaning.
Are you going commando, Dan?
No.
I am.
No.
I live a commando's life.
Mackie mentioned the name, actually, and...
So that means Mackie is going commando.
I certainly am not. I only remember that because it's the default promotion on a spy.
But to follow up with Alpha Shard's comment, a couple of real-life examples, you know, Nelson's Navy, a good chunk of the ships in there were captured French men-of-war. Another little-known fact is after the 1967 Arab-Israeli War, Israel became the largest producer of spare parts for Russian tanks. And that was just a function of how many Russian tanks that they had captured in 1967. So,
Anwar Sadat.
For quite a while there, they were using a lot of Russian equipment.
Maybe they could be a great general thing. I don't know.
Maybe a great spy could go around and capture units.
And automatically, magically have the technology to run the updated equipment.
Well, they could commandeer it. It could even be something you do specifically for the spy.
And then what would they do when they commandeer it? I'm just asking. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just asking you, because once you commandeer it, what are you going to do? Well, you got to study it, figure out how to use it.
Well, for simplification purposes, as far as gameplay goes, the realism aspect that people have mentioned
gives you plus whatever beakers towards researching the technology that enables it.
Oh, hey, that makes an idea.
And the way I would see it working in combat is perhaps there's a percentage. 10% of the time or at some random factor, whenever you eliminate a unit, you have a chance of capturing it. That may increase by a promotion, as you were talking about, Dan.
Yeah, there you go. Just like any particular promotion line, like City Raider, for instance, through successful combat, if you got City Raider 1, successful in combat, you got another promotion. City Raider 2, thereby, hey, you know, you'll have a better chance, you know, so long as you allow the unit to heal up as necessary. You'll have an even better chance the next time because it's specialized in that particular form of combat.
When you do take over a city that has either ships in harbor or planes in the city, it seems to me there should be a good chance of capturing some of them before they're either scuttled or, you know, destroyed on the runway, which presumably is what the game assumes happens now.
Oh, yes, the Enigma. When you said that, I was saying, well, the Enigma.
Yep.
Code machine.
Yep.
Capture it before they get a chance to change the code. It may have its advantages, but I'm sure it would take a lot of coding.
Well, and another real-life example was the French fleet at the 1940. The British felt compelled to go in and sink it before it fell into enemy hands. The ships are sitting in port, and unless they're purposely scuttled, you know, if you walk in with a tank unit, I'm not sure why you wouldn't capture the ships as well.
Yeah, I think the Germans would be able to use those ships, so that was probably a good idea, so yeah.
Oh, and that was exactly it, that the British had no guarantee whatsoever that the French were going to be able to keep them out of the German hands.
Talked about earlier of having a specific promotion line probably should actually be required to even be able to try to capture a unit, have that particular promotion, but it should be limited to the type of units. Like, for instance, being able to have that line and possibly capture an archer unit or a melee unit. I mean, there's some equipment there, but it's not to the same degree. It's not as a great
right.
likelihood as, say, an air unit or particularly naval units.
Right. That's what I was talking, like, along the line of Firefox. where you go in and steal this great plane that the enemy has come up with. I don't know if you all ever saw the movie Firefox.
Clint Eastwood?
Yeah, where he went into Russia, supposedly this plane, this big technological advancement that they had. Not everybody's going to be able to know how to use that from scratch. So that's kind of where I was getting at about just because you find it doesn't mean you can automatically use it immediately.
Then we have to introduce the Clint Eastwood unit.
or the Rambo unit.
I think the simpler units like the trebuchet, catapult, maybe even the cannon would be easier for someone to acclimate to.
Right.
But the more advanced, the harder it would be. So maybe, yeah, percentage, and maybe you would need a specialized unit.
Yeah, if you take a 13th century knight and then skim to fly a modern jet fighter, that's not going to be pretty.
Well, unless it's Battlefield Earth, then they can do it.
Unless his name's Martin Lawrence.
Perhaps even when you capture a particular unit, if you're successful, there's a turn or two where you're not able to do anything with that unit, whether it's injured or not.
Right.
That it stays in place, so you need to decide how valuable a capture is this unit, in which case I'm going to need to protect it with other units, while if not for a turn, maybe another turn had that scale with game speed, for instance, to try to balance between the gameplay aspect, but also the realism aspect, which of course, as you say, could be quite open to exploit. If you've just got so many number of units and the other one is technologically superior, but you're able to capture enough of their units, the knight comparison, and then being able to take on an aircraft unit, just some kind of penalty.
Right.
And make it as simple as possible.
But to get around that, you could also implement a rule where you can only capture units at your technological level or lower. That would easily get around that. In other words, so yeah, the knight captures a plane, doesn't know what to do with it, he just leaves it there.
Base it on era.
Yeah, exactly.
Civilization 5, a whole new Civ.
I loved Riesmeel's post in there. He says, I want this, I want that, but he thought he had a lot of great ideas. He's the guy who ended with, finally, I want dinosaurs because they are cool, but that may just be me.
I think it would be cool to have a little bit more culture depth. I know that this has been brought up in other threads. Like, if you're playing the Chinese, do you actually feel like you're China? Like, somehow implement some of the culture from the various civs that you're playing, give you a better idea of what their culture is like.
Well, here's one I wasn't so hot about, is they were talking about scoring, V. Soma's post, and scoring you negatively for evil, quote-unquote, actions. No. Because most of the actions we're going to do to play a game, to win the game, are going to end up being evil at some point.
Yes, ma'am. I agree.
It's like, you just started an aggressive war. You get less points. What?
I mean, unless you're playing some variant where you're trying to play a pacifist game, then okay. But for a normal game, yeah.
It's called SimCity, isn't it?
But I do like the idea with scoring generally. And I realize it's more about of an end game sort of thing. The final score you see at the end. That unless you win by conquest or domination, and also happen to have a particular build-up in terms of cities and units, your score and in particular your rating in the game is likely to be pretty crap. I would go for victories other than conquest, and it wasn't almost hardly ever culture. It was usually diplomatic or secondarily space race, and the score and the leadership ratings are just like usually the Dan Quayle. As much as I like the acronym DQ, I really don't want to see that when I
I hear you.
I like those initials, but not in the game.
I particularly like that one suggestion that it should be a longer game. Because people who are aware of Civ and don't play it, one of the first comments I hear is, oh, it's way too long. You know, that unless they can play this game in an evening, they're not interested.
Make it longer.
Yeah, make it longer. As we know, Civ's long now, and particularly if you play on Epic and some of the Diplo games, goodness, make it a longer game than that.
Yeah, Marathon. I mean, what do you mean the game needs to be longer? Come on. That's just yeah. No.
My one wish from the existing game would be get rid of workers. And
do a Civilization Revolution type of deal?
I was thinking more along the lines of improvements cost a certain amount of money, and then you can build them. So to build a road would cost a certain amount of money. Build a bridge would cost a certain amount of money to, you know, erect a town, so that you'd have to make these choices as opposed to, you know, having still to me, yeah, there's some strategy and tactics involved in using workers, but to me it still ends up being a lot of micromanagement that, in all honesty, I could do without in the game.
That's not a bad idea to get pay for improvements or stuff. I mean, that's just interesting.
Yeah, so it would be more of a hand of God thing where you're pointing and saying, okay, you build a road there, and it just magically shows up after you've paid for it.
Well, not, and again, I recognize that some of these things are long-term projects that it could be. Build a transcontinental railway is going to be a five-turn event. We'll get it done. It's going to cost a lot of money, and it won't be ready for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, that's where it would differ from Civilization Revolution, for instance, because if you have two cities in Civ Rev, you go to one Civ and you say, build a road from here to that other city, and it's a direct road, and as long as you have the gold, it's built instantly that turn.
Oh, yeah, it should be weighted. Kind of in the game have this thing where you can see workers building it over time.
Yeah, that would make sense, and then someone could come in and mess with them if they're at war with someone.
Okay, as long as it's the build over time factor. The instantaneous thing works in Civ Rev when we're talking about a more streamlined game and trying to appeal to not as necessarily hardcore strategy players as we are here.
I guess I'd also like the advisors back.
Oh yeah, that'd be awesome. I want Elvis.
I like the scientist and the female spy, because the scientist would be like, we're a little bit behind in technology, so why don't we get the spy to go steal some for us? And I just thought it was funny.
She was so into me. I missed that.
Maybe she can slap you around, too.
You mean she was two-timing?
Oh!
Oh! Man!
That bitch!
Calling today! In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659.
That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at the Polycast.
Or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Dan, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hello, Dan. Can anybody hear Dan?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I can hear you, Miss Mackey. I just have a little problem. I can't hear Dan. Are you there, Imran?
I'm here.
Okay. Is Dan still here?
Yeah, Dan's here.
Dan's here.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay, I guess I'm not picking up what he's saying, okay? It's okay.
He's speaking Canadian, that's why.
Oh, that's... Is he back on yet?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Dan, does your leg hurt? I think it's being pulled.
Yeah, I think so, too, based on the chat. Yeah, pretty funny.
That was like the worst planned thing ever.
Yeah, because you don't have a wingman.
If you want to do that, don't type in a chat where Dan can see. This goes back to our earlier topic.
Well, I had to because no one was picking up what I was putting down. I was like, God, come on, folks, work with me. It's like...
You've been listening to Polycast episode 74. I am Imran Siddiqui, and I've been joined by Dan Q.
You have indeed.
Makula.
Bye.
Scott Alphasard.
Shard. And, bye.
Oh. Bruce Beta Hines.
Goodbye.
And Bruce Grandpa Troll Cronkite.
Hasta la vista, baby. No, goodbye. Guten Tag. Guten Nacht.
Welcome to Polycast.
Oh,
Alpha Shard.
Sorry. Okay.
Thank you for the blooper.
So we might need a whole separate podcast. Just yes.
Whoops.
It was so big that Maggie couldn't even say it. Actually, I was going to say something far worse than that, but I didn't.
Yeah, bet you were.
No. It was so... But,
I should have known. I should have known.
I did anyway.
You have to put that in the bleepers, though.
In the bleepers?
You're going to have to bleep it to put it in the bloopers. Jeez.
Where do I have to bloop it to put it in the bleepers?
That's what she said.
Record date July 25th, 2009. Civilization 4, Warlords and Beyond the Sword sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright 2009, Civilized Communication at civcom.net.